everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Nunes is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casello, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy second or third week of quarantine, depending on who you are and where you are.
Welcome to day, I don't know, I guess for us it's 16, 17, 18, something like that.
That's about right.
Dan's still in South Carolina.
This is true. I'm still in South Carolina. It's seemingly likely that I'm here through like almost all of April, considering how New York is right now. So we'll see. We're playing it by ear.
Yeah, he's a resident at this point.
No Gamecocks.
Because, yeah, there's no chance in hell that Dan would ever root for Clemson.
I mean, I'm also staying with all Gamecocks, so I need to do that.
I did, when I was at the 2016 national title game, I did like subtly wear like maroon for the Bama Clemson game.
Because
again,
right,
no way in hell. Subtly wore maroon, like no way in hell I was rooting for Clemson.
Yeah, I a bunch of my really good friends from home went down here and who I'm staying with now, who are Gamecocks. And then through them, I've met a number of other Gamecocks. So it's just kind of like they ended up, you know, being adopted as my SEC team for obvious reasons, but very appreciative of them right now. Although we're going to, you know, we have the shelter in place in Columbia now as well. So it's just a little bit more of a spread out shelter in place than a New York City apartment, but we're making the best of it. I'm drinking some good beer, which I'll bring up later. So getting through it day by day, but hopefully, you know, I do miss the city. So hopefully things start to down the downswing there soon.
Yeah. I'm fingers crossed that that things are starting to clear up by May, but you know, I'm not going to pretend that I understand infectious disease control on this end.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, I feel like unless you're, you know, an actual expert, and I mean like an actual expert in this one field, you're just everyone's, you know, throwing stuff out at the wall and hoping that they're right. But yeah, hopefully just follow their lead and continue to do what you're doing, and we'll get through this and not have any more sports compromised. Because I know anyone listening to this is probably like, you know, really not thrilled with how things have played out, but you know, it's all been for the best, and hopefully we can, you know, do the best we can to make sure that it doesn't happen for football or anything else more drastic.
Agreed. Speaking of other sports, before we get to the Syracuse matters at hand, in classic Mets fashion, the Mets, like most of the starting lineup, I feel like will be out, would have been out until like June. At minimum, Noah Syndergaard was added to that pile of players who would not see the field with or without games. So yeah, classic Mets to just kind of lose the 2020 season before it even started. looking forward to 2021.
It's wonderful because a large segment of the Mets fan base online was like, well, at least, you know, there might not be any baseball this year, or like there'll be an abbreviated season. So this weird elbow injury that, you know, could have actually cost us more games in a less like ridiculous timeline. So I guess that's like the most optimistic you can possibly hope for from Mets fans now, or ever really. It's like, oh, our starter who's coming off of a disappointing season, but we were hoping would bounce back, might only miss like an abbreviated season or like half of one season and half of another season. Look to the upside, everyone.
As Dan and I have discussed numerous times, the Mets are an interesting breed of a bad team. And as a result, have an interesting breed of fans because they're not the types. And there's some crossover really with Syracuse fandom, to be honest. Syracuse fans, especially with basketball, are used to at least some sort of great and then occasionally amazing. Counter with that, like Mets fans are used to mostly very bad, but there's those spikes of amazing. And the spikes of amazing are what make Mets fandom different than other fans. I'm trying to think of like if there's like a college basketball equivalent to that. Not off the top of my head, I'm sure.
Honestly, you could argue like they would never admit this. You could argue UConn post Calhoun. You could argue like Kevin Ollie UConn was kind of Metsy, except that the Mets would actually win the title. If they had made the Final Four twice and then just like bombed out the other 3 years, that would have been very Metsy. So they're probably not the best example. That's the first one that came to mind.
An example. I mean, Villanova.
Yeah, Villanova. But again, like, the Mets don't actually win.
But they have won. Is the thing
they have? They have. In the,
it's not in our lifetimes.
it's yeah, it's tough. Just like college basketball, it's hard for teams to like vacillate wildly between like championship caliber and like really bad. Like even missing the tournament because it's so. I would say the better them might be football. It might be like Auburn. Auburn's yeah. obviously has a higher floor, but also like the you know situation in college football is different. Because like Auburn's floor is pretty solidified in terms of like the talent level they bring in. But in terms of like the wild like vacillation between like all of a sudden they're contending for a title when they absolutely like, probably shouldn't be, and then like years where it seems that they should, they finish like 7-5. That's pretty messy.
I can see that. What about Ohio State basketball?
Yeah, I can see that. I think it's interesting. Under Thad Matta, they definitely had their heights. I feel like it's a program that you wouldn't like doesn't jump to mind. Like they're good always, but like it's so far beyond their football program. That's an interesting one. Not a bad comparison, I don't think.
Yeah, because like they do miss the tournament. They do look bad sometimes, just straight up bad. They haven't won any time recently, but they've come very close.
I'm trying to think of others like there. But pre Kirby Smart, Mark Britt Georgia would have been a good one, I think.
That's fair.
Yeah, similar to like.
But Mark Richt Georgia didn't have necessarily too many the problem I think is the floor that you have to find to be comparable.
Yeah, which is tough in college football because just like the college football doesn't again like you don't have these crazy whips between like really good and really bad. Maybe Michigan, although it's also coach heavy and like right. The Mets are the Mets no matter who's coaching them, like whoever the manager is. the Mets always have the Mets stank on them, but like college football. You know, you can really fix it if you just go out there and get the right coach. Now, that's easier said than done. But eras are so easily defined in college football. And in baseball, I feel like they're much more difficult.
Yeah, this was a weird exercise and not what I anticipated, but I'm fine with it.
We're back, baby. This is the podcast. This is what the people want.
Yeah, this is, gets the people going. This is going to be some vintage Trending and Snapsley podcast for a bit.
Off season forever.
Actually, we're only like a month out from talking about Sunbelt previews.
It's going to be really disheartening if the college football season gets canceled, but we've only gotten through like the MAC. So we're previewing these G5s that like won't actually happen. Hopefully, fingers crossed, that will not come to pass because that'll be bad for like all of us. Me, very much so. That will put my day job in a very interesting place. I'll be writing about like happy viral videos or something in the fall. Yeah.
Dan will be running some sort of like BuzzFeed-esque.
Honestly, we're not, you know, the content minds have to be stocked. It doesn't care for clips don't care for whether football's happening or not.
Dan, HQ Trivia is back. They're gonna need a host.
Are they actually back?
Yeah, HQ Trivia got an anonymous donor to bring them back. Which like really. If there was a perfect time for HQ Trivia, this is it.
It's whoever. Is it the same person who funds the Federalist?
Probably.
We're going to cut that one short. We're moving on.
That was. I was actually when you were talking about your expertise on infectious diseases and being an actual expert or not. I was going to go into a very Chapo-esque imitation of someone talking about their proficiency with the material. I left that one on the cutting room floor, thankfully. Probably for the best.
I can't believe someone anonymously funded HQ. So there needs to be a documentary about HQ Trivia. It's probably down the line from like WeWork and a couple others, but like we need at least a shoddy documentary on them that like Hulu will rush to production.
There's some real dark money there at this point.
I played that game for way longer than I probably should have, but I won a few times and it's very gratifying.
I played like three times. I had friends that were like hooked and there's like it really cut into productivity in a way that like few things can.
We definitely had the like classic like month of like the entire office playing and that was fun. But then like, you know, people fall off and I enjoyed it for what it was, but I am now unbelievably interested as to who is funding HQ Trivia.
I'm sure. I mean, the Wall Street Journal wrote about it like yesterday. I'm curious. I'm sure somebody like will figure out who funded this thing. And when they do, please please write all the stories about that person if they're not like an obvious, actually, even if they are an obvious person, I do just kind of want to know.
We'll do a whole podcast on it. It'll be great. We'll need to fill the time.
I'll interview the person. It's fine.
Let's bring them on. That'd be good. What do you think about the Syracuse basketball voting and the ACC men's basketball bracket? Anonymous H2 trivia donor.
Can they please be a Syracuse fan?
Oh, that'd be so good. I'd be very happy.
I would definitely do some digging on that. Okay. So now that we've reached minute 10 or so, Syracuse, they're speaking of like random internet things. Syracuse fans have done exactly as you would expect. The ACC, for those who didn't notice, like a week or so ago, I guess a little bit more than that at this point, tried to name the top player of the last 50 years. The only stipulations were that, A, they had to play for a current current ACC team. B, they had to, there were no more than five players allowed, I believe. Maybe it was six. It was five or six players allowed max per school, no fewer than three. Syracuse is one of a handful of schools with five. People have gotten really mad because, as you would expect, ACC fans, especially the Tobacco Road variety, don't like to see, an encroachment on their history in any way, shape, or form. So
that's become very clear.
This has become super clear. No matter how many times they get mad, the rules are thrown at them by very petty Syracuse fans. We'll get there. Ends up is we kind of figured like right at the beginning, this was not going to be a tournament about the teams that have support and the schools that are good and the players that are good. It was going to entirely be a tournament of disrespect, pettiness, and who better to exemplify that disrespect and pettiness in ACC basketball, at least, than Syracuse and NC State, who wound up being the entire Elite Eight in this tournament. All four matchups were between Syracuse and NC State players. Syracuse won the first two. This episode will be up before the other two games are resolved, but right now SU players lead in both of those. I think the most stunning thing to me in this tournament so far has been the fact that Derek Coleman beat Michael Jordan. Dan, what's your favorite moment been so far?
That was mine because Derek Coleman was up like 30 points and it became very clear that some ACC fan bases realized what was going on and got the vote out hard and they still couldn't do it. They still couldn't eclipse the Syracuse fan efforts. I think Coleman won like 52-48. It was very close by the end, but like it became very clear that people were like, we need this to not happen. This is ridiculous. He didn't play in the ACC, et cetera, et cetera. He's not Michael Jordan. Although I will say, I'm not saying Derek Coleman was a better college player than Michael Jordan. It wasn't that far off. Like, it's not that crazy if you're doing a college comparison.
Jordan has like some very high highs. I think if I was like winning player of the year, yes. hitting the game-winning shot in a national championship game. Those are all really big things. But I think if I was
a non-Syracuse fan, I'd probably vote Jordan. But like, Derek Coleman was the number one pick in the draft for a reason. Obviously, Jordan was a high draft pick as well. But like, it wasn't like, it's not crazy crazy. Crazy crazy is a person that neither of us have heard of, Rodney Monroe, an NC State alum, beating Christian Leitner. That's crazy crazy.
Well, I actually helped fuel that along with some others.
Oh, I don't
think a lot of people like, hate Christian Leitner like really hooked.
Oh yeah, I mean there's a documentary about it. I just really enjoy that like NC State was the fan base, the true ACC fan base in quotes that came out to like try to be the ones to block us, but NC State's like the worst possible ones to choose because like they're so petty and get in the mud with everyone else so bad. Like UNC fans are not going to be probably voting for Syracuse people as much as they'll hold their nose about it. So, and this also, it just reminds me, this is like the internet version of that pre-ACC Syracuse NC State game when we went down to Raleigh and like they had no idea that we were going to basically like take over the PNC Center. Like they did not know what the Syracuse fan base is all about.
It was right after like the Denny's jokes and everything.
Was
and,
it?
Who the hell was? Yes, it was right after the Denny's jokes. Mark Gottfried got like really annoyed.
Yes, I was at the Denny's press conference, which is like one of my claims to fame. I was covering the Syracuse Providence team, and I was there. And I like gasped when Boeheim said it because it was so perfect. And I've only been to like a handful of Boeheim press conferences, so I really lucked out.
Yeah, I the only one I guess I could have gone to would have been the after the North Carolina Final Four game, but since I decided just to go as a fan and not press, I didn't show up to that one. But I didn't cover the team when I was in college. Otherwise, yeah, I probably would have had more stories. I was too busy being on the album reviews beat as the as a reviews editor for 20 Watts for those that recall the student music magazine at Syracuse University.
What was the highest score you ever gave out to an album, or were you guys like not unscored?
No, we did scores. I think we just did out of 10. I gave out, I mean, that was a really great year, to be honest. I was there for like
2011 is a good music year.
Well, it was, yeah, it was because I was there because I was the music editor from like the reviews editor from like 2009 to 10. So that was when Meriwether Post Pavilion came out, The Catamist from Grizzly Bear. What was that other, that Dirty Projectors album that was really good. I think there was a new Flaming Lips record in there. Some Drake. There was a lot of like really good stuff that came out that year.
Yeah. It's like a strong era of college radio.
Yeah. Like we also had like a digital, like radio show too, that we did. And yeah, there were a lot of like bands that were just like fixtures. Rural Alberta Advantage was like a staff favorite. For those that are or not aware of them, they were a fun band.
I actually don't know if I know them.
I will send you some links after this because they are a really fun listen, especially like back in the day.
Nice.
But yeah, that was a rare music interlude on here. Dan and I are actually both really big music fans, yet we never talk about music on this show.
There may be more.
More might be coming.
Don't you all worry.
But in any case, yeah, back to the bracket. We, Dan, I know I said this in the article that that Syracuse and NC State fans would be the two fan bases most likely to die in a fight defending their team's honor in the basketball version of the ACC. Who do you think is in the football version?
I was going to say, you and Steven hire lawyers to do it for them. Football version, Clemson now. The obvious answer is Florida State, but like I don't think that's the case anymore. I think peak Florida State Twitter, yes, 100%. But I think Florida State's been kind of like muzzled by just like mediocrity for a couple of years here.
There was a Clemson, yeah, NC State. I think it's NC State.
Is it NC State? It might be. I'm trying to think. I'm trying to like be more interesting about it. It might be. It's like it Miami, but then they. No, you know what? It's Miami, but they show up and like it's like 300. Like there's not that many of them. The ones that are diehard Miami fans are like really big Miami fans, but there aren't that many.
Yeah, like I want to like throw back to the Bagel Boss episode of this show.
Oh God!
and no, it's honestly like we're on the list for both. We're not as high on the football list because like that's the same thing with Miami. Like there's a few of us, but they exist, and I don't think you and I are really the people that are even among the us on that list. For basketball, we could be convinced to be, but football, I don't think we are. I think we're just super realistic and passionate about a team that sucks more often than not. Football, I think Clemson, is the most Clemson. Cause Dabo loves being the manufactured disrespect guy so much because he understands ever has.
Yeah. I doubt they would have been it. But Dabo like drives it hard. If they had another coach, obviously they probably wouldn't have had this success, but if it was like another coach doing the same things, like Saban doesn't really do it. And like, if it was Saban at Clemson, which is a weird thought, like maybe he would change because Alabama is obviously a much different animal in terms of like history, but I don't think so.
Yeah. I'm trying to think that like then nobody believes in us. Like nobody believes in us usually doesn't work as long as Dabo's pulled it off for. So Clemson still remains like the top, like disrespect. I think NC State's got to be the other one for football, to be honest. Because I think the ACC Football League is very clearly like you're either a basketball school, just like cosplaying as a football school, for a couple months a year, or you're a football school. And like, there's not really like NC State's the lone, like hanging in the middle school, maybe. But can you think of another? Is like, or I think they're really like the only one. Like, I guess like some Syracuse fans would try to make a case for us, but no, we're a basketball school. As much as this podcast would love for something different to be true. But like, yeah, like Georgia Tech, Florida State. I mean, Florida State's been really good in basketball lately, but they're still a football school. Like, yeah, Georgia Tech, Florida State, Virginia Tech, Clemson, clearly football schools. Pitt's neither somehow. Good for you guys.
I think they were pretty solidly a basketball school more than anything else. Like they probably
for a while, but they were a football school more than anything else for a long time before that.
Yeah, I mean, you just don't have the consistent fan base for it. Like the only time they fill the stadiums when Penn State comes, like once every decade.
Way to go, guys.
Or I guess if West Virginia was still on the schedule, maybe they would.
Yeah.
But and that's hopefully a thing that will happen again. Because like as a neutral observer, that's a rivalry we need back.
It's on the schedule a few times, I think.
Is it? Let me see.
Like,
I thought they were like discussing it, but couldn't figure it out. But I might have just forgotten that they.
Yeah, 2022, 2023, 2024, and 2025.
Okay, that's awesome. I might have known that at one point, but you know, we've all lived a long time in these last few months, and my brain can't retain all the information it had once.
Yeah, this is getting rough for a lot of reasons, and I'm sure that the other listeners that have small children might empathize with me on this. That
I can imagine.
This is a unique brand of hell. Sometimes, luckily, we still have a daycare situation that works, so we can get work done during the day. And you know, you only have to do so many things really before and after work. Since she's young enough to go to bed pretty early, but weekends are a unique brand of warfare that that you really have to train for.
I don't envy you in that regard. I'm just like today I wasn't working, so I just had nothing to do, and that felt like a lot. I'm glad that I'm not envious of having to like be responsible for another human life beyond my own like boredom and anxiety.
The challenge is really the fact that we can't like go to a park or anything.
Are they actually like yeah, making like, you not like even if you're distance?
They're like roped off. Yeah, like they're like roped off and gated off and shit. Yeah.
That sucks because like they haven't tried down there in New York, but it sounds like they might because like you would hope that people would be smart enough to like go to the park, but like follow the rules and not ruin it for everyone. But as like human nature dictates, they will ruin it for everyone because no one can just do that.
This is Southern California. They've lived, like, if you tell people don't be selfish, what do you think the first thing they're going to do is?
That's true.
And I say this as somebody who's lived here for now, like almost 8 years. if you tell Southern Californians don't do something, the first thing they're going to do is that our walking trail is also roped off now because God forbid people would just like walk on a walking trail. Nope. It turns into a block party. Everyone congregates, people picnicking on the grass. So the walking trail's off limits now.
Yeah. See, we have all pretty much the same rules here in South Carolina, which is surprising. They actually got on board that quickly, but apparently, like the golf courses are still open and like, you'd think a golf course is somewhere where you could like,
zero surprises.
Yeah. Well, no, that, obviously, they can't take that away from them down here, but like, you would think like, okay, you could probably pull off golf and it'd be like, you know, okay. As long as you like made sure the carts were all really well sanitized and whatever. And one of my friends went to the range the other day, and like apparently there were like 25. Well, they weren't let him in the clubhouse, but there were like 25 old dudes like standing outside the clubhouse, clustered together, drinking beers. It's like, oh, okay, so we're just not gonna even try.
Yeah, that's we're not gonna get into politics, I swear. But that is the one thing that like is just annoying me to death. Is just because like realistically, if the entire country just had said at the beginning of this for 2 weeks, just everyone just participate. And we said, yeah, let's do it. And then just like, just spent 2 weeks, maybe three, like indoors limiting ourselves. Like that'd be it. It'd be over.
We might already be like probably still taking precautions, but like at least getting close to like a normal life. And instead, you know, who the hell knows when that'll be the case.
See everybody in May.
Hopefully.
Ugh. Anyway. Not that we want to make this. I feel like a lot of podcasts have been doing this where they like start off talking about the subject and then they
end up. It's really hard not to. Yeah. Like, I get it. It's hard not to, though.
No, it totally is. Like, yeah, we're kind of in like a unique place in history here. one that I hope is over soon in a positive way.
Correct.
Dan, I want to talk a little bit about beer, and then we can get back to some other Syracuse-related things.
Yeah, so I pledged last week to at least go get something local, and I did. It's not a lot of different things, but I went and picked up a six-pack of Steel Hands, which is basically for everyone down here, like the best Columbia area brewery at this point. And I'm having their Tropical IPA, which I will say is really, really, really good. Super flavorful, really well balanced, like a nice hop profile, but also like really nice citrusy notes. So really enjoying it. I'm having one right now, actually the first one I've cracked. So I will enjoy those six and maybe just kind of work my way six pack at a time through the South Carolina beer scene here, as long as I'm here.
Very nice. I didn't have a ton of like unique stuff. I had one of the last two Luponic Distortion cans that's in my fridge. And then Smog City is doing beer deliveries, as most breweries are here in California. So Smog brought over, they did a pretty nice deal, actually. You get you get a Crowler 3-pack for like $25, which is pretty good. Each of those are 32 ounces. So decent amount of beer. So I got their Quarantine Machine IPA, the West Coast IPA. Finished off two of those three Crowlers. And then they also sent over I ordered it, obviously. 2017 bottle of their Chocolate Imperial Stout, the Nothing. And then a 2016 bottle of their Apricot Sour Cuddlebug that I've talked about at numerous times over the last few years on this show. And then a buddy of mine went up to Highland Park Brewing in they have their Chinatown tasting room that I've been to numerous times. Got me a 4-pack of their Crossbow Pills. Some good drinking coming in the next few weeks. But it's a lot of sameness to it too. You can only go out and get so much, really, before you're like, okay, this is over the top. I think I'm just gonna stick to my local spots, make sure I keep them in business, and I'll bite the bullet on a few things.
Do you guys have places down there doing deliveries?
Yeah, most of ours actually are doing deliveries. The bigger places are doing deliveries themselves. I can pretty much get most breweries in California, I can get stuff, but like a bunch of them are only shipping by the case if you want to do something that's not like super close by, and then you got to pay a decent amount for that. But the more hyperlocal, like bigger spots are just doing like truck deliveries all day.
Yeah, a lot of the New York City ones are too. I haven't actually explored the options down here, but I'm happy that at least a lot of the city ones have seemed to have some success with it, which is good. I don't know how many of them are getting up to my apartment where I am not currently, but it's a good sign. Apparently New Jersey, which is usually pretty strict on the beer front in terms of rules for breweries and whatnot, which is why they took a while to really get the whole thing going, has also passed a rule where they can deliver now. So it's good. Anything can help to like, not obviously we're beer focused here, but anything like that to get like local businesses that are taking a huge bath right now, a little more, more options to make some money is good.
Yeah, I know California's waived a bunch of things. I think they're even waiving like some of the ABV laws ABC laws in terms of like containers. Like I've seen a bunch of like bars filling like clear containers and stuff like that. I know too, like a bunch of bars and restaurants around here have been like doing like cocktails to go, even of like all the ingredients in a like mason jar with like instructions.
Yeah, it's a tough, just in general, like it's kind of a tough line to walk, because this is actually like a good opportunity to be like to kind of cut down a little bit on spending and like cook for myself a little bit more than I do, which I should. But then also like you want to, you know, support places that are getting just crushed by this whole thing. So hopefully everyone can do a little bit of that just to keep everyone else in mind, especially like gig workers, restaurant workers, obviously grocery store workers. Because this whole thing, like that's a situation where if this keeps on going for a while, like we're going to get some really interesting and not in a good way results here.
Yeah. Yeah. Then those who can support their local businesses, definitely do so. I know I'm not ordering out more than I normally do. I usually do like one lunch out and one dinner out a week because I can only do so much with the kid. But I'm still trying to do that. So either doing like, door side pickup or delivery, for some of the local spots, just to make sure that they're supported. And like I said, you know, doing beer delivery. So anyone that can do that, definitely try to. And those of you working in the service industries, grocery industries, any medical industry in particular, thanks for everything you guys are doing, keeping us as normal or close to normal as we can be right now.
Yes, eternal thanks, especially if you're in one of the hot spots. I can't even imagine like what that is like right now. So, or if you are listening and you are on the front lines of this thing, like very sincerely, our eternal gratitude.
Agreed. Dan, we'll go from one bracket to another here. Syracuse football. If you remember, a couple weeks ago, we did the best Syracuse basketball team since 1975. Last week, we did a very involved brewery bracket. 68 breweries narrowed down to one. We had some ballot stuffing.
I love that we're on both sides of the ballot stuffing game on 100%. The internet this last couple of weeks.
We took some notes and we realized that we could use this power for good. So after Mortalis Brewing up in Avon, New York, the Rochester area, won our brewery bracket by way of just emphatic ballot stuffing. We decided to use that to our advantage in the Syracuse basketball, ACC basketball bracket that we discussed earlier. And now we move on to our third bracket of the, I think we're doing five of them. I guess, spoiler alert, the other two will be local Syracuse food options and Marvel Comics characters. Maybe we do some others. I don't know. Brackets seem like a really interesting and easy way to get people involved. But yeah, the Syracuse football one we're doing since 1950, just because I think that's a good line to draw. There were a couple really good teams in the 50s with Jim Brown. Obviously, we get to catch the 1959 championship team. Tried to make this as like kind of evenly spaced as possible. Everyone will probably notice that the only decade not represented at all here is the 1970s, for obvious reasons. Shout out to Frank Maloney and the rest of the assorted mediocrity that took the field in those rough 70s before the dome was built. Dan, there's going to be two obvious teams that that have an advantage here: the 1959 championship team and the 1987 undefeated team. Are there any other favorite teams in here that you're seeing? Any other teams that you're kind of curious to see how far they get in this event?
I feel like the other teams are all kind of like what-if teams where they're like loaded with talent but couldn't quite like win one or two big games that would have had them.
What's up, Coach P?
Yeah, honestly, it's like the Coach P teams, like the 92 team. Honestly, like all those early 90s teams were all really, really good. I want to say, what was the McNabb team that beat Michigan, the 96 or 97 team? 96 had to be because Michigan won the title next year. That all ended up like 10-2 or 9-3. But the talent was so good, like littered with NFL players. So I think those are the really interesting ones. But I also assume that the voting is going to be very skewed towards like the 80s and 90s teams, because that's when a lot of the readers obviously came up watching. That being said, I'd be very surprising if it didn't wind up being 87 versus 59. And that's right. Like, those are the two pretty definitively best teams in the modern / like modern-ish program history.
Yeah, we'll have the next round of voting up, like, I think shortly after this podcast posts on the blog on Tuesday. But right now, 1959 holding a very commanding 214-1 advantage over 1964. I don't know who that one who voted against the 1959 team is, but whoever you are, props, I guess, for being a nonconformist. That's like the most lopsided one. The 2001 team is a pretty hefty lead over the 1961 team. The 8-9 matchup. 1988, big advantage over 1966. The 2018 team, surprisingly, probably going to lose here. The 1991 squad, I honestly thought that the 2018 team was going to be able to, you know, win a round or so, just because of people who have like recency bias and just want to see like a more recent team, I guess, go a few rounds.
Yeah, I think the draw is tough because 91 is like a really, really good team. And I think that's probably the right call. I assume if we like, if we have like Bill C go through and run S&P Plus for you know 30 years, 91 would probably have been a better team than 2018. But and if 2018 had gotten a different draw and it's like an older team, I think they probably would have won. But it is a little surprising that it's pretty lopsided at this point, 64-36, yeah. Based on the votes right now, percentage wise.
Yeah, there's a couple like really lopsided ones. I mean, the 92 team that you had mentioned, big advantage right now over the 63 team. The 63 team was actually really good. They went 8-2. They didn't make a bowl game. Like, I think some people do forget like how the bowl system was different back then. Like, there's a lot of like random, like we had like a 7-4 like Fiesta Bowl team in here, like a 7-2 Cotton Bowl team, just because like it was just weirder. And you know, being really good didn't guarantee a good bowl game. Sometimes being really good ended up putting you in a weird game. Like, we were in the Hall of Fame Bowl for a couple seasons despite going 10-2, because, you know, conference tie-ins or lack thereof didn't really help us out. There's one non-bowl team in here, the 63 team, went 8-2. There was another one I was going to toss in here, but I figured people didn't really like to see like non-bowl season, even if there's a valid reason for them. People were also mad that the 95 and 96 teams were facing one another, and that the 96 team was a 3 seed. As I noted in the comments, this 96 team, according to Football Reference, is actually the second best team since 1950 for Syracuse. They were right behind the 59 team. They were actually ahead of the 87 team. Most people just kind of see the 9-3 in the Liberty Bowl berth, and then as not as good as the 95 team, which went 9-3 but made the Gator Bowl and smoked Clemson 41-0, as we'll happily remind Tigers fans. But yeah, again, college football is weird. We all know this. Random bowl games, schedules that don't really overlap much, shady polling practices until recently, and even then, still some shady polling practicing. Another one that was weird, 87 versus 98. I mean, I figured 87 was going to win, but a pretty clear 94-6% advantage. There's actually not a lot of close matchups in here, despite me thinking that most of these were going to be pretty evenly matched. And these teams really are historically pretty evenly matched.
Like the other part of the 87 thing, and not that they, you know, have or taken anything away from them, but like 87, there was definitely like some schedule help, some teams that weren't as good as they normally would be, which helped us roll through that. Obviously, yeah, at the same time, like if they, hello? Oh, sorry, I saw your Slack message and I thought it was to me directly. I thought you sent me text and I was like, what? Nope. I can't do that. It's a podcast. No, I think like it's easy to slip with the undefeated schedule. But the 98 team obviously had to deal with like some really tough Big East teams in that like late 90s era before the ACC came and swooped in. And obviously like probably blew one or two games that they should have won, but like they were not that far off from making like a big national run. Though 87 is a choice. Like, I don't think you have to overthink it too much, but I'm a little surprised there weren't some younger fans who remember that. Although like an 8-4 season like that, where they're so talented, like there's also a little bit of like what could have been negatively in terms of like reflecting on the voting.
Yeah. We're going to get into some fun what ifs actually this week too. Everyone will just see that on Wednesday, but yeah, I think that that's a good point right there. There's certainly a little bit like for us, I mean, like I was rooting for the team a bit like before I got on campus. I know you weren't necessarily, but like there's only a handful of those what if situations for us as Syracuse football fans since like 2006 to 2008. So like realistically, I think all of our what ifs are positives of like, oh, hey, I remember fondly that team that fell short. But man, imagine if Dr. Gross hadn't scheduled them into the ground.
Yeah. Basketball is very different, which I'm sure will be a major theme. But yeah, that's like basically all I hear from like the 90s fans was, you know, one game away from being in like another BCS bowl or, you know, who knows what would have happened if Coach P had gone over the hump or just didn't have this devastating loss to Georgia Tech, did another year, don't hire G-Rob because it doesn't line up. It's always fascinating. I mean, it's fascinating for every school, but I think with Syracuse, especially Syracuse football, you can really point to like individual things or like if they hire Bo Pelini instead of G-Rob, like, you know, I doubt Bo Pelini's still here because he, you know, we'd still be at Nebraska if he didn't have like a total meltdown in all likelihood, but how much, like how much of a difference is it? How much is the floor raise? So, yeah, it's always interesting with Syracuse fans. They love, it's definitely a thing where they really enjoy debating it. In football, it's like a much rosier picture. Basketball, like it's the difference between us being like a really good program, a top 10 to 15 program. And, you know, John Wallace doesn't foul out. Derek Coleman doesn't miss some free throws. Obviously, a dramatic corner three doesn't go in. You're probably talking about like, oh, Boeheim's in the like true pantheon of all-timers with like maybe three national championships pretty spread out throughout his career. You know, but if Brandon Trish doesn't get that bad foul call, same thing. So
what a Fab plays. I mean, like you could, I mean, most programs of our caliber can do this, but you could easily talk yourself into like more titles than is healthy.
It's almost like I kind of feel like the 2016 Final Four gets remembered more fondly than the 2013, despite the 2013 being a much better team, because 2013, like the loss to Michigan was really devastating, and the way it happened, it going to overtime, I was just like kind of running out of players. Was so much more devastating than like, oh, we got literally as far as we could have, then UNC blew our doors off, but we weren't supposed to be there, so you know, whatever. It was an amazing run, but I almost feel like people look more fondly on that, even though it was like, you know, we got to the same exact place. And 2013, like, that was a much better season. We got a lot done that year. I made some just unbelievable wins down the stretch. Team got a lot better throughout the year. So it is interesting how expectations and, like, the what-ifs kind of frame things. Because, you know, we were so close to doing it as Louisville, who we'd beaten that season. I probably told this on before, like, the night after that game, we were on the MARTA in Atlanta. And we happened to be riding with a bunch of Atlanta, Louisville trainers. And they were like, yeah, the team did not want to play you guys for a fourth time. They really thought they'd have trouble beating you for, I think this would have been the third time that year. They were very happy that Michigan beat us. So, yeah, that's like, you know, it was awesome to be there. But, you know, you really thought that Syracuse would have won it that year versus 2016. Like, odds are we were not going to, given what we were up against. And the fact that we just beat Virginia was such an accomplishment. You kind of put your hanging your hat on that. So, just the mentality of things is always so interesting, especially, I mean, it's a sports thing in general, but there are so many things to point to for Syracuse basketball, especially.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird. Like, obviously I'm not a part of another college like fan base. I feel like college sports in general, because of its randomness, because of how many teams there are, there's a lot more near misses than you get in pro sports, like especially like baseball, you get your near misses, but by and large, like the sample size is large enough. I think basketball more than hockey actually usually reward one of the best couple teams. Like historically, that's just how it's worked. I think football, you have some randomness, but sometimes it's course correcting for a season that just was influenced too heavily by strength schedule. When it comes to college sports, there's just so many teams that you get to play what if a little bit more. And I think there's probably teams out there, you know, that could claim more legitimate what ifs in football just by way of, you know, strength of teams and opportunities presented to them. I think for us there, though, I think there's, because we only have one title in each, I think Syracuse fans do at least engage in what if more than most fan bases that I've interacted with. Again, adjust that for sample size a little bit, I guess. But yeah, I think what if is a big part of this fan base. And that's why I kind of have a fun what if exercise plan for Wednesday because of that, because I think that there's definitely a lot of unique angles, and some of them more obvious than others, that we'll be able to kind of take down some random rabbit holes, I guess.
Yeah, and honestly, this is the time to do it. Like, there just isn't much more to do, and if people can have fun with those conversations and engage and at least take their minds off of everything else for a little bit to reflect on some fun memories, even if they come with like some angst over the what ifs themselves, and like, you know, it's not, there are worse ways to spend your time.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, like, we have our usual off-season stuff, and I've been trying to stave off the typical off-season production for as long as possible, since that usually doesn't get going until, like, May. So we're going to need a little bit more, and that's kind of why this bracket stuff's coming up. It's why some of these other random ideas are coming up, because I'm trying to keep us from that well as long as possible.
I think we should have a week of just celebrating the national championships for every Syracuse team that was not eliminated in the winter and spring. And obviously the lacrosse team, because they are the 2019 national champions.
Well, we already created a banner for the lacrosse team. we just need somewhere to hang it.
We should send it. Actually, put it with the trophy, the 1990 trophy. Wherever that is.
I heard you guys have an extra trophy hanging around somewhere.
Yeah, here's a banner for whenever you want to, you know, display this.
Where do you think the trophy is? Because I know people involved have noted, like, there's only a handful of people that know where it is. And like, it seems like it's hidden in plain sight.
Like, the obvious answer is
it's somewhere in the dome.
Somewhere in the dome would be good. Hopefully it got moved before the construction. It's either, I mean, the obvious answer is like somewhere in the dome, somewhere in Manly. like the coolest answer is like if it's buried with Simmons. The real I think the real home of it is like somewhere in Harry's. just somewhere in Harry's. It's probably somewhere in plain sight, and just everyone's so drunk every time they step in there immediately that they just no one's noticed.
I can see that.
That's really the beating heart of the lacrosse program, so it makes sense.
Like, I do hope we find out where it is at some point.
Like, I think the moment that the NCAA gets disbanded, like, that trophy's coming out.
Oh, 100%. 100%. I wouldn't doubt it either if it's, like, in just, like, one of the, like, main, the main people of interest houses.
That's very possible. I don't know. I think, like, and we, you know, it's come up before, and there's, like, a whole pretty well-done documentary about it, aside from, like, we don't know where it is still. It's, like, one of the cooler sports things. Like, there's this literally, like, we have, like, a pirate trophy, like, that is so heavily guarded that, like, there are rumors about it, but it's not, like, an open secret where it is. Like, we don't know.
Yeah, it's impressive. It's impressive that the secrets, right. Like, especially in this day and age, that, like somebody always opens their mouth. It's amazing that nobody knows where it is.
It'd be really easy for it to be like one of those like wink, wink, nod, nod secrets. But like, oh, it's in Derry Gate. It's in Derry Gate has it in his office at home or something. No, we like no one definitively knows except for probably like how many people do you think total know? Like in between, I'd say like under 50, probably less.
Well, I guess it depends on how many people are on the team. Like, because is there a cutoff of how many people on that team know?
That's the question. Like, if the whole 1990 team knows, then you open up yourself. But I kind of think it's fewer because I think if the whole 1990 team knows, it would have gotten out there. That's a lot of people.
But like, is it 1998 team only? Is it certain? Is it only starters and like key reserves? Is it do their spouses know? Like, is there a like? It really is a super interesting thing. Like, I do think you're right. I think it's under 50 people know. And like, it just so like, and I think the details of where it is are such that I think however it was found out, you'd immediately be able to point to who gave it away. And they'd just be like, kind of like excommunicated from like the men's lacrosse, like brotherhood.
I would truly watch like an infinite part true crime documentary about the trophy. It's like, it's probably the most fascinating thing about Syracuse sports. It's so cool that we have a mystery trophy. I love it so much. Like, part of me doesn't want to know where it is because of that.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Like, I kind of hope this sticks around, like, for a long time. And, like, I know, like, the big, like, kind of weird tradition thing that people wrote about last year, like, on The Athletic and, like, ESPN, where, you know, like, it was the varsity banner flip. And, like, that is a fun tradition, an interesting one, yes. But this is the best tradition. Like, I 100% agree with you that, like, this is the tradition that that really could, like, stand the test of time.
Yeah. It's great. So props to the secret keepers. Glad you have all done your jobs throughout the years so that we can have a cool thing.
Yeah, I remember when, like, Louisville was going to get their, like, title stripped, and I even, like, wrote an article about it. Like, Louisville, like, there's a way around this. Like,
there's an opportunity here.
Yeah, like there's clearly, like the rule book's already been thrown out once on this one. And, like, the NCAA even forgets that they strip us of the title because the amount of times you see a graphic about how many championships we won during a game. Even in-game, I know, like, I think Brian Harris and then some other people have, like, taken pictures of, like, the scoreboard. Like from the NCAA, like during games that shows like 11 titles. So the NCAA even forgets at this point, but like there's like, we told you how to do this. So like anyone who gets a title strip from here on out, like we've already showed you how to do it. If you haven't figured it out by this point, like, sorry.
You know what my favorite thing about it? And I say this with like utmost confidence, which I just realized, Dr. Gross doesn't know where it is. There's no chance he knows. Guy was traipsing around Drumlin's telling everyone in the world we're going to the Pinstripe Bowl in 2010 before it was announced.
He still talks about it too. Even though he hasn't worked there in years, he still talks about it.
We're two ADs. I know one of them was very short. We are two ADs past him. He worked at SU for a long time. And based on everything I know about Dr. Gross, and you know, we've talked about his legacy for, you know, at length. It's not all bad. Like, he did some really good things. There is 0% chance Dr. Gross knows because he absolutely would have tried to monetize it. There's just zero chance. We would have had a sparsely attended trophy day against Rutgers during a lacrosse game And like, it would have gotten enough 1,000 people out to like take pictures on the field with the long lost trophy by paying $25. And Steiner Sports would have like melted it down and sent out pieces to people. Like, we 1,000% would have taken advantage of it. So Dr. Droz definitely does not know where the trophy is. And he was like the head of Syracuse Athletics for like a decade, right? A long, long time.
Do you think, okay, so like people that would have to know, like, you know what? I don't think Jake knows either.
Yeah, maybe not.
He doesn't know. Like, do you think
Coyle obviously doesn't know?
Do you think Shaw knew though?
Shaw might have known.
He's somebody who hasn't really talked to the media much. Like, the other thing is like they can't really be much for like being public figures at all. Really, the people who know, like most of them, can't really be big drinkers, because then you're always like one too many beers away from like revealing it.
Which crosses off a lot of lacrosse players. No offense to lacrosse players, I've hung out with plenty of them. They get it. Yeah, I mean, it like there's a chance it's like 10 or fewer people.
That would be absolutely wild.
There's a chance it's like the Gates, Desto,
who are all public figures.
Yeah, but like maybe a handful of players from that team. The Simmons is obviously maybe whoever the AD, maybe Jake does. I don't know. It's really cool. I want more content about the trophy.
That's the thing. Like, why is this so? Like, I know, like the documentary even like took a long time to get made.
Yeah, the ACC Network should have like really done it up for the launch, because it's like just a great story, and it introduces people to like Syracuse a little bit more.
Well, I think that's why people haven't done it, because I don't think anybody involved with college athletics wants to seem complicit in this story.
Although wasn't it an ESPN production?
It was an ESPN production, but it was like a web only. Like, yeah, 30 for 30, like, adjacent thing.
It was good, though. They should play that, like, on ACC. Like, right now, that thing should have been played on ACC Network a few times.
Well, this is why, like, the fact that, like, SU didn't have anything really ready to go is, like, a huge missed opportunity. Like, I know we've done the Tiana special, and, like, there's things you could mock up, but, like, there's a lot of stories that, like, remain. Like, how much would the ACC and Syracuse really have to pay to, like, get, like, the Express played, like, once a month during the offseason on ACC Network?
It couldn't be that much. It's, like, it played a lot on TV when it, like, right hit.
It was not a well-received film.
No, it's, like, a classic, like, it was mediocre fine. Sports yeah. movie that, like, Syracuse fans really like. And, I mean, I really enjoyed it when I watched it, because it was cool. It came in my freshman year, so it was, like,
yeah, very like, much, I was like, at, like, the on-campus, like, thing. Like, I don't know if you were there, too. Like, that, like,
I didn't go.
Yeah, like, it was, like, I don't even know why I went. Like, I think I was walking through the quad, and I, like, was going to head to, like, a Friday class or whatever, and I'm like, no, I'm not going to go. Like I just, like, didn't, because, like, you know, like all the main people involved, like, in both the movie and the actual events were there. Yeah, I think, what's his face? Why is his name escaping me? How do I not remember this person's name? This is gonna like piss me off now, because like there's no reason why I shouldn't know this name. Yeah, Dennis Quaid. That's okay. Like a mini stroke. It's definitely like a mini stroke. Like the type of thing where like everyone should know who that is.
Let John go to the park.
Yeah, this is yeah, this is pretty bad. Yeah, like Dennis Quaid was there. There's a bunch of other people there. Definitely rough times here.
Then we lost to Penn State by a million points that weekend. So just
yeah,
really not the best.
It was one of the only games that I've left early, because I just couldn't stomach it anymore.
And then we lost to Akron. My freshman year was great.
I stayed during that entire game, actually.
That was family weekend, so I think I did too. Oh, God.
Jesus. Okay, this episode's gone oddly into like an overtime area that it hasn't in a while, and of course it's like the most random of random topics.
At least it was Syracuse related. We were very front heavy on non Syracuse related. We drifted into subject.
I'm gonna edit it to be the other like the other order.
That's actually a great idea. Look at us just really nailing the Syracuse stuff up front.
It's killing it. Anyway, Dan, anything else before we go?
No, I'm afraid to keep on going, because who knows where we end up.
Also true. Tulane actually got a new field in today, so props to them.
Ooh, I'm going to Google that now.
It looks super nice.
I bet it does. They do everything so well.
Yeah, they appear to have more money than us, even though that's almost certainly not true.
It does look good. I kind of like the off-color thing they were going with before, but it does look good.
Fair. All right. Well, Dan, hope you remain safe and healthy down in South Carolina. Hope you are able to return to New York soon. Hope everybody out there is safe and healthy, and please be sure to take care of yourselves, your family, first and foremost, as all this is going on.
Mm-hmm. Ditto everything John said, and to you as well.
Indeed. For everybody listening, this has been Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. That was Dan. I'm John. Please, please, please rate, review, and most importantly, subscribe to the show on iTunes, on Megaphone, on Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, Overcast, whatever other service you listen to podcasts on, and go Orange.
Orange.